I'm excited to be here this evening, and usually I'm pretty nervous when I've been asked to speak before, and I'm nervous as well today, but I'm actually more excited than nervous because I was asked to speak at a youth night. That's exciting. Let me explain why. Because that means I'm still a youth. So, of course, Colleen didn't ask my age. So, but I'm excited to be here and to share this message with you. I hope to learn from it as well. And it's been a pleasure to just kind of be studying for it. So with that being said, let's get into kind of the theme for tonight. I want us to think about the smartest person that we know. Who's the smartest person that comes to mind? You don't have to say it out loud, necessarily. I mean, you could if you want to. Could be a professor. I heard somebody say their dad. That's sweet. It could be a friend of yours, maybe your parent. It could be Albert Einstein, right? Commonly known genius with the white hair, E equals MC squared. It could be, you might think that you are the smartest person you know. That could also be true. I see a lot of people nodding. That's great. I was thinking about it. I looked up on Wikipedia who might be considered some smart people that we know. You know Leonardo da Vinci? Make sure I got this right. Yep. So he's famous for what? Mona Lisa, right? This painting that he did. But I looked him up. I'd known about this. He was actually a scientist slash artist, right? This man was brilliant. He created inventions. He designed bridges and a flying machine. He didn't actually fly, but he designed it. Waited for other people to try. He dissected people after they died. He dissected them and figured out how different parts of the anatomy work, the circular system, circulatory system, and other systems of the body. He did it by careful observation and is considered to be a very intelligent man. So he came up as this wise person, this smart person. Then I found another guy. This guy was very accomplished. He was a musician. He wrote a really famous, he wrote about 1,000 songs, actually. Think about that. I see some people's jaws just dropped. 1,000 songs. Think about the current musicians that are your favorite musicians. It takes them about a year, maybe 2 years, to come up with an album, right? 10 to 15 songs. This guy wrote 1,000, over 1,000 songs. And people across the nation sang them. I mean, they were number one chart toppers. So that's pretty impressive. I see people aren't very impressed. Okay, I thought it was impressive. But he didn't stop there. He decided it's not enough to write songs. He wrote poems. Okay, still not very impressed. He wrote this really famous poem that is known worldwide. The guy didn't stop there. He said, that's not enough. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to get a master's. I'm going to get a doctorate. So he became, I looked this up, he became a botany expert. Studied plants, trees, everything in between. He knew it all. So that's not enough. He became an ichthyologist. That's right, ichthyologist. I didn't know what that meant either. It means somebody that studies fish. Became an expert in fish. He got his PhD in that. Then he said, I'm going to become a ornithologist. Anybody know what that is? Whoa, okay, I didn't know. Somebody that studies birds. He was an expert in birds. Then he became a professor in herpetology. Reptiles, that's right, serpents. He became an expert in herpetology. Didn't stop there. He said, that got a little boring. I am going to become an expert in design. So he designed buildings. He designed this one building, took 10 years to build, and he designed it in such a way, he designed the system that huge chunks of granite were cut out from the hills and brought into the city where he built it, and there wasn't any hammers, no chisels were needed. They were so perfectly cut that it fit piece by piece. The guy was a genius. He was an artist who created sculptures. What else did he do? He was also an expert judge. He got his doctorate in law and became such a good judge that the entire nation was like, what is this guy going to say next? They respected this man. Can you imagine all these degrees and what an expert he was? But you think that's enough? He didn't stop there. He said, okay, I'm going to be a politician. Think about our politicians today and how wonderful they are. Think about how well they've been able to keep us out of war for the last 10, 15, 20 years, last year. This guy, up until he became head of state, there was wars pretty much every year. There was a new war. This guy became head of state. He became a ruler, and there was not a war for 40 years. There was peace. How do you do that? He made peace with all the people, all the kings. Kind of giving away a little bit. He made peace with everybody around him for 40 years. That guy was smart. He didn't stop there. Then he's like, oh, I'm going to try my hand at business. He tried his hand at business. He was the CEO of the biggest company in the nation, and his income, I looked this up, his income was $1 billion a year. You think I'm making this up? I'm not. $1 billion a year. I don't even know what that means. $1 billion a year for 40 years. For 40 years. That's over $2 trillion. I figured it out right now. $2 trillion in 40 years. Okay, so he didn't stop there. He was also a really good preacher. This guy wrote a book called The Preacher. And he created this amazing sermon that was a bestseller. Hundreds of millions of people have read his sermon. Okay, who is this guy? Solomon. Did you guys know he did all this stuff? He got all these degrees. And here's what made him wise. No school debt. I mean, he just did it all. This guy was a genius. I don't know how, but he did it. So Solomon. Solomon comes to mind as I was looking at, like, wisdom. This guy was really good. So then the question comes, how did he get his wisdom, right? Did he go to all these schools and spend years of his life doing it? No. He took a shortcut. Anybody want to be like this guy? Okay. 1 Kings chapter 3. Verse 5. This is the secret to becoming like Solomon. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, ask for whatever you want me to give you. What would you ask for? Y'all heard the story of Aladdin, right? The genie with three wishes. That's a fairy tale. This is true. God came to Solomon in a dream and said, whatever you want, I'm going to give it to you. Think about that for a second. Let it sink in, right? Money, nice house, really cool car, great family, wealth, a long life, that guy that you don't like to be destroyed. Well, God mentions it. He's like, you didn't ask for that. Solomon could have. God says, you could have asked for the death of your enemy, right? Solomon didn't do that. What would I ask for? Solomon asked for wisdom. This is what he says. Skipping to verse 9. So give your servant, this is Solomon answering God, give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours? So that's what God offered Solomon. And this is what he asked for. He asked for wisdom. This is where it started. That's the beginning, right? We don't know what it was like before. He asked for it and God gave it to him. And how do we know? Because we see all the things that he did. Chapter 4, verse 29. So God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight and breadth of understanding, measureless as the sand of the seashore. Skipping to verse 32. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. So just in case you thought I might be making up what I was saying about him, He was a musician. He wrote 1,000 songs, and people sang them. And then here's the rest of it. He described plant life from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. And then he taught about fish, birds, reptiles, and fish. Men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom and sent by the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. So that's where I got it from, right? Solomon was given this great amount of wisdom, and he used it. He did a ton of things that I've just described. I spent the first 5 minutes describing how amazing and how great of a wisdom God gave him. So that was the secret. God gave him wisdom. Here's the thing about Solomon. Verse 29, it says, he had very great insight, and he had a breadth of understanding. Those are two separate things. One thing is to have insight. Anybody know what that means? It means to kind of have a lot of detail, knowledge about one particular thing. For example, insight about cars. I could say I have insight. I know you step on the gas and the brake and you turn the wheel and you put it into drive and you go, right? That's some level of insight. It's very superficial. I was talking to a friend of mine who broke it down into like the gears and the carburetor and the oil and the pistons, and he knew, he had insight. He knew how that car worked forward and backwards. That's insight. You have a ton of information. You know it really well in a small area of information. People do that. People spend their entire lives learning about the brain of a rat or something, right? You get a lot of insight. But Solomon didn't just have insight. He didn't just know a lot of information about one particular thing. He knew an incredible amount of information about an incredible amount of things. And God gave it to him because he asked for it. That's what was amazing about Solomon. But it doesn't really say that much about Solomon. Yes, he asked for the right thing. It actually says more about God, who's willing to give. That's the focus, right? The God is the one who gives us this wisdom. So, hopefully, looking at Solomon's life and how amazing he was, what he did, what he was able to accomplish, hopefully that's enough of like of a motivation why we should seek wisdom. But if it's not, I'm going to go into it further, because that's kind of the point. I want us to look at wisdom and what it means. What is it? How do we get it? And so on and so forth. So why is wisdom important? We're going to look at Proverbs. So if you guys would turn to Proverbs, we're going to spend some time in Proverbs chapter 1. Chapter 1, verse 1. Proverbs, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life. Okay. The first nine chapters, if you read Proverbs, when you read Proverbs, the first nine chapters are actually explaining why it's important to get wisdom. What are the benefits? If I'm going to get something, I'm going to spend some time purchasing a house or getting a car or investing in something, I want to know why it's important, right? My argument tonight is that we need to read Proverbs. More than that, we need wisdom. But the question before that, before I can sell that to you, I convince you, I need to figure out and explain to you why we need it. And the first nine chapters explain to us why we need wisdom. And I'm not going to go through all of them. My invitation is that you spend some time reading chapters 1 through 9, and they'll explain it. The basic idea, I'll summarize, the basic idea of why we need wisdom is because every single thing that we do, my thought, my actions, everything in between, the way I feel, has a consequence. The wisdom is knowing what particular thoughts, how do I feel, and how do I behave in such a way that I get something out of it, that there's a purpose to it. That's wisdom. Knowing how to act, how to think, how to behave in such a way that something good comes out of it. That's one definition of wisdom. And Proverbs gives us that. It gives us direction. Let's look at Proverbs 1:31. It says, talking about evil men in this case, they will eat the fruit of their ways and will be filled with the fruit of their schemes. That verse exemplifies what it means. For every action or every thought, there's a consequence. In this case, the Proverbs describes it as fruit. There's a consequence. The fruit is the consequence. Let me give you an example of that. So every day I drive to work, and on the street that I turn in the middle of the highway, or the street, there is an island with grass and some orange trees. And I've been working there for a couple of months. First month, entire month, I drove by this orange tree, and there's about 5 or 6 of them filled with these beautiful oranges, just like glowing in the sunlight. And every day I'm driving by them, and every day I'm thinking, why are they there? And why is there nobody picking them? I'm Romanian. Why are these oranges just staying here? And so I stopped one day, and I picked an orange, and it looked so good. That was the fruit, right? This is going to be delicious. So I took it home, and I took off the orange peel, and I bit into it, and it was the nastiest. most sour piece of fruit that I have ever tasted, and I spit it out. That's why people don't eat from those orange trees. The orange tree illustrates, in my mind, what this verse says. They will eat the fruit of their ways. That orange tree is a horrible tree. The point of an orange tree is to get good, delicious, sweet-tasting oranges. Those oranges were really nasty. That tree was pointless, if you think about what the point of the tree is, right? That's what this verse says. These evil men have evil fruit. They're evil actions. And they're going to eat from those evil actions. They are going to get the consequences. The way they think is going to equal the way they behave. And those are the consequences. God has set up an orderly universe so that every action that we take is going to have a consequence. And that's kind of the premise of Proverbs. What is our point? What is the point of our existence? What direction do we want our lives to be going into? And Proverbs gives us that sense of direction. The other side is true. Thinking of this example of this orange tree with this horrible fruit, think about the metaphors in the Bible. God often uses the metaphor of the tree with fruit, or he uses the vine and the branches, right? We are the fruit. If we stay connected to the vine, if we let the power of Christ come through us, then we have good fruit. That's the opposite. That's the life-giving side of it. Let's look at a couple of examples, because I want us to really look at the idea of actions and consequences. So Proverbs 19:19, this is what it says. A hot-tempered man must pay the penalty. If you rescue him, you will have to do it over and over. Consequences. So this is my part. So the consequences are an angry man or person needs to face the consequences. If I step in and intervene, somebody gets angry, and I, you know, go and apologize for this person, and I try to take care of them, he will never learn. Proverbs tells me, let that angry man get the consequences. He needs to get fired, right? He needs to get whatever it is. If it's a kid, he needs to get nuyawa. I couldn't think of the English word. I think that brings back memories of me as a kid. I'm just kidding. So he needs consequences, right? If he's an angry man, and it says, don't intervene. That's a piece of wisdom that we get. The idea of action and consequences. Angry man needs to learn by his consequences. Next one, Proverbs 20, chapter 20. A gossip betrays confidence, so avoid a man who talks too much. It's a really good proverb. It tells you the action and it tells you the effect. If this person is a gossip and I go and I tell him about my life, he's going to blab it to the rest of the world. Those are the consequences. Proverbs gives me a heads up. If I read Proverbs and I look at that person and I know that person talks, guess what? If I've read Proverbs, I'm going to not talk to that person. What would happen if we all stopped talking to that person that we know is a gossip? There would be no gossip. Natural consequences, right? If we know this person is a gossip and they blabber, well, I'm not going to share my secrets with them. I don't want that. If we all did that, the natural consequence would be that gossip would dry out. But it's so fun to gossip, so it keeps on going. But Proverbs gives us kind of, here's the action, here's the consequence. Just in case we missed it further, Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 10. I'm going to read the verses. Again, the idea of actions and consequences. So, a little bit of context. This is Israel. They're about to enter the promised land. Moses, God speaking through Moses, is reminding them. If you read Deuteronomy, it's a list of rules and laws and do this, don't do that. And they're about to enter Canaan, right? It's a new generation. And they're about to enter Canaan, and he tells them very specifically, when you lay down, when you wake up, when you walk, think about my laws, think about my rules, think about my commandments. Talk about them with your kids, right? How many of us pull out the law book and say, children, here's code 67 of the Fullerton Penal Code, right? God says, talk about these laws to your kids. It's our job to make them interesting and fun, but he says, talk about them, right? And here's why. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 10, they're about to enter the promised land, and God knows, right? He knows what's going to happen. When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. And here's the warning. Be careful that you do not forget your Lord, failing to observe his commandments, his decrees, and his laws that I'm giving you today. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, and when you build houses and settle down, when your herds and flocks grow large, and your silver and gold increases, and all you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Skip to verse 19. If you ever forget the Lord your God, I will testify against you today that you will surely be destroyed. This is the crux of why it's important for us to have wisdom, of why Proverbs is important. God clearly says, you're going to go into the promised land. He's not saying if, he's not saying whatever. He's saying when this happens. God knows, right? He can see the future. And he's saying, you're going to go to the promised land. You're going to get rich. You're going to get herds and cattle, and you're going to get translated into modern times. You're going to get that nice car and that house, and you're going to have a good life, possibly, right? God promises this to them. And maybe we're there. Maybe we have all these things, right? Maybe we're in different circumstances than we were in the past. Sometimes God blesses us financially, but not always. God is faithful in whatever way. But in this particular case, he said, I will bless you. I will give you all these material wealth, and you'll be satisfied. You'll be eating steak, and you'll be eating ribs, and you'll be eating organic salad. Whatever it is that you enjoy that you think is good, that is what I'll be giving you. That's healthy for you. That's good. You're going to get that. He says, when you get there, don't forget the Lord your God. Don't forget these laws. Why? What happens if you forget? Then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God, and then the end result of that is you will be destroyed. God can very clearly see the consequences. He knows where the path leads. You get rich, you feel comfortable, you get used to life, and then you get proud, and you say, well, I can do this on my own. Right? When are we closest to God? For me, I know it's often when I'm in trouble, when things aren't going wrong. That's the easiest time for me to turn to God. The hardest is when things are going well. And that's what he's saying here. When things are going well, that's when you need to keep it as a lifestyle. Keep this Proverbs. Keep this talking about commandments. Keep it going. Otherwise, you will forget. And the moment you forget is the moment you start heading this down this path of destruction. It doesn't say maybe we will be destroyed. It says you will surely be destroyed. So why is it important? Because if we forget God, we will be destroyed. If we forget these laws, we're going downhill. I want us to think about the idea of a path or a walkway or the idea of fruit, right? These are images in Proverbs that come up, images that illustrate behavior or a sense of direction. You get on a path, you're going somewhere. Let's look at some Proverbs that illustrate this. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 15. My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths. This is talking about don't go with evil men, people that are violent. It says don't hang out with them. But I want to highlight that it says path. Don't set foot on their path. Verse 19, such is the end of all who go after ill-gotten gain. So it says this is the path. This is where it ends. Again, verse 20, in the street, in the public squares, that's where wisdom cries out. It's out in the middle of the city. Verse 21, the simple ways. Verse 22, how long will you simple ones love your simple ways? Different ways of saying a path, a way to go, a sense of direction. Chapter 2, verse 9, then you will understand what is right, fair, and just, and you will enjoy every good path. Verse 13, wicked men who leave the straight paths and walk in dark ways. I think I've given enough verses to point out, to have us realize that Solomon and the people that have put together Proverbs think that paths and ways are important. What they signify, what they show us, is a sense of direction of where we're going. He describes it here as, verse 13, wicked men who leave straight paths and walk in dark ways. Think of the image of a straight path, and think of a dark way, right? There's no lights. You don't know where you're going. The way I like to think about it is kind of like imagine it as Google Maps. You're trying to get to, let's say, Santa Monica to eat those amazing crepes with Nutella and jam. And somebody tells you about them. And if you've never been, by the way, they're really good. Crepes with Nutella and jam. And you want to go to Santa Monica, but you don't know how to get there, right? What do you do? Google, right? You Google it. You put in Google Maps, and it'll show you. It'll show you the time. It'll show you the satellite pictures, satellite images. It'll show you every step of the way. It'll show you how to get there. Google Maps is very useful. It shows you the path. It shows you the way. It'll show you traffic. It'll say, take this alternate route, and it'll take 5 minutes less than this one. Here's how you avoid traffic, right? If I don't know, or I think I know it all, I'm the guy, I'm not going to stop and ask Google Maps for direction. I'm going to take the 91, and I'm going to head east. And I'm going to keep going until I find Santa Monica and get my crepes, right? I will end up in Corona and Riverside, and you don't want to be there. You don't want to go there. I'm just kidding if you're from Corona. I grew up there. That is the point of having Google Maps, right? If my pride gets in the way, I'm going to get totally lost. Not only lost, but I'm going to end up somewhere I don't want to be, potentially. That's the image that comes in with paths, with ways. Where am I going? That's the question that Proverbs puts before us. My way of thinking, my way of behaving, where does it lead? So hopefully I've convinced us, or I've at least opened up our mind to the idea that maybe, just maybe, having some wisdom is important. It shows us what direction we're going to go in. If we're going to spend our entire lives, we might want to know what direction, what's the point of what we're doing. It's a good question to ask ourselves from time to time. The next piece is, fine, wisdom is important. I get it. You've talked about it for the last 20 minutes. How do I get it? A hint, right, was from the first verse that I read about Solomon asking God for wisdom. But before that, there's a couple other ways to get wisdom. One of them is from my own experience, right? I can learn. I can become wiser. I'm never going to eat from those oranges again. I've learned from my experience. That's one way I can learn. The problem with that is that it's painful. It's painful to learn from your experience. Second way, you can learn from other people's experience. You guys will never, hopefully, will never drive up to UC Riverside and eat from those orange trees, right? Hopefully, you have learned from my experience. If you don't, we got to talk. There's a problem. A second way to learn is from other people's experience. Listening, that's a great way to learn. Third way is from not just learning from other people's experience. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20 says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but a companion of fools gets in trouble. I don't want to spend too much time on that because it's pretty clear, right? If you walk with people that are wise, you're going to get wiser. If you walk with people that are foolish, I see somebody raising their hand. Walk with those people that raise their hand. Walk with the wise, you get wiser. How does that work? Say I have trouble going with the idea of anger, right? Say I get angry real easily, and I walk with people that are wise. Well, maybe they don't deal with anger. Maybe they are patient, because Proverbs says a wise man is patient, right? So maybe these people are patient. Well, guess what? I'm the one that gets angry, and I blow up, and I start yelling at people, and I get to see myself, right? I get angry. I just blew my top, and I yelled, and this person's calm. And I get angry, and this person's calm. After a while, this is going to get boring, and I'm going to feel embarrassed. And I'm gonna be like, dude, why are you patient all the time? Okay, well, let me tell you. And then they share with you how they got patient, right? They read Proverbs. That was a subtle hint. Continue reading Proverbs. So that's an example of why it's important to walk with the wise. Opposite is true, right? If I hang out with this person that gets angry all the time, I'm going to become like them. If they tell off-color jokes, I'm going to remember those jokes, and I'm going to tell them to other people. All right, so the idea of how do I get wisdom? I walk with wise people. Next way to get wisdom is through our parents. Can I get an amen? There was a lot of silence right there. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. Let's see. Go back to that. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching, for they will be a garland of grace to your head and a chain to adorn your neck. Our parents love us more than anybody else in the world, right? Our parents are the ones who gave birth to us, or in the case of our dads, have loved us for all of our lives, right? They want the best for us, and they have gone through the school of life, and they have wisdom. So that's another way. Clearly, Proverbs, this very wise man who had multiple degrees and knew it all, this is what he says. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction. Listen to your mother's teaching. So our parents are a fantastic source of wisdom. One thing I want to say to parents then, so I've said to us as children, for us as parents, that's a huge responsibility, right? I am a son, but I'm also a dad now, and I have a daughter of my own. And speaking to us as parents now, we have a responsibility, right? Because as a parent, I live with these kids, my children, day to day, day in and day out, and they see me. And if I tell my kid, do not get angry, do not waste your money, and they see me doing that, right? So wisdom is learned in the family. Over and over in Proverbs it says, my son, listen to my instruction. You know, the wise son, the wise daughter makes their parents happy or proud. So we get it from our parents. As parents, we have an awesome, amazing responsibility to teach wisdom by the way we behave and by the way we speak, right? And Solomon clearly says this in Proverbs 4, chapter 4, verse 4. When I was a tender boy, right, young in my father's house, that's when wisdom starts. When I was a little kid, it doesn't start as a teenager. Listen, son, let me tell you about the world. Right? It doesn't start there. It starts at a young age. I think of my daughter. She's a year and a half, and she helps me with laundry. When we do laundry together as a family, it's a great thing. You should try it. So we do laundry, and we pull the laundry out of the dryer, and she's there, and we hand her the clothing. And we didn't teach her this. I didn't say, Arabella, take these clothes and do this. But she picks it up, and she takes it, and it's as big as she is, and she shakes it. And then she folds it, because that's what she saw her mom and dad do, or her grandma do, right? She learns from us. My actions will teach her, right? As parents, do we have that wisdom? Are we living in such a way? So that's another source of wisdom. And the other final source of wisdom is our relationship with God. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. Where it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but fools despise... Sorry, I lost my spot here. But fools despise wisdom and discipline. There's a couple assumptions from this verse, right? One is that there's a Lord. That means that I understand where I relate to God. There's God, and I am subject to him. That is wisdom in itself, the fear of the Lord. The other thing that it implies is that I need to have a very specific relationship. It's not just he's my buddy, or I talk to him every once in a while, or I will take his advice and I'll think about it. It's he's the Lord, and I am his servant, and I obey, and I listen, right? There's a relationship. And then there's the other piece about fear. What comes to mind when you think about fear, right? It has negative connotations nowadays. You think about a coward who like sweats and hides and is afraid. It's not a very good idea of what fear means. In this case, fear of the Lord means awe, like a reverence, like a king or somebody that you admire. And you say, whatever they say, I will obey, I will respect because they are amazing. That is the type of fear that this verse talks about. Why and how is it important to get wisdom from the Lord? Because he created this universe. He knows the laws. He knows how it works. And he just like he created gravity, he created morality. And there are certain laws, whether I respect them or not, they're there. When I was 5 years old, I decided that I could fly. So I climbed up to the balcony, second floor, second story, and my sister Ada was walking up the stairs. And I said, Ada, look, I can fly. And then I climbed over the railing and I jumped, believing that I could fly. I knew I could fly. And I was in for a rude awakening because I quickly fell to the ground and I bit my tongue. And I was very disappointed. I could not fly. Still can't fly. That is an example of the universe that God created and laws. Law of gravity, whether I believed it or not, was still there, right? The fear of the Lord says, here's the Lord. He created certain rules. I respect him. I am in awe of him. Let me obey these rules. Let me want to because he's so amazing. All right, so we've looked at the sources of wisdom. Here's a couple of attitudes that I need to have that bring wisdom. One of them is listening. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 10. Pride breeds quarrels, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. Listen, my son. Over and over, if you read, and when you read Proverbs, it says listen, take advice, so on and so forth. In so many different ways, the idea of listening to something is a part of gaining wisdom. What's so important about listening? How often do we really listen to somebody? Think about that. When was the last time you spent an hour just listening, not interrupting, not having your own thoughts, not wanting to argue, not wanting to make your point? When was the last time you listened to somebody for an hour? When was the last time you listened to somebody for 30 seconds? Right? What I mean by that is really listening. Like, what are they saying? Who is that person? It is really hard for us to listen because what I want to do, I want to come up with my own ideas. I want to share how wise I am, how much I know. Over and over in Proverbs it says, listen, right? There's a certain humility that comes with listening. I must want it really bad. So second attitude is searching for it. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 3 to 5. Here's how to get wisdom. If you call out for insight, if you cry aloud for wisdom and understanding, if you look for it as and search for it as for silver and for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord. So we said wisdom comes from the fear of the Lord. How do you get that? Listening, right? Taking in, being willing to receive. Then it's not just being willing to do that. It's being willing to do it with a passion. Crying aloud. It's not just like, oh, please give me wisdom. It's yelling for it. God, give me wisdom, right? It's not just yelling for it. It's searching. What does it say? Searching for silver or for hidden treasure. What is something that I treasure? Imagine that nice car. Imagine $100,000. Imagine that latte froca mappuccino from Starbucks. I don't even know what that is. Imagine that coveted latte macchiato, right? I don't drink coffee. Imagine that Dolce and Gabbana purse, right? Trying to relate to the ladies in here. What is your treasure? Whatever it is, imagine that thing that would be really cool. That's the hidden treasure. Imagine I told you that it is in the parking lot, hidden. And all you got to do to get that $100,000 or that mocha latte or that purse, I see some people looking. Imagine I told you all you need to do is get up and go right now in the parking lot and find that treasure, right? This would be an empty hall. I'd be speaking to myself if you actually believed it and if the treasure was there, right? There would be nobody here. Because we'd be looking for it. It's something we want. Proverbs says, wisdom is like that. Wisdom is better than that hidden treasure. How much time do I spend looking for that wisdom? How much time do I spend crying out to God? It's a good question. I know not enough for myself. And then the final attitude is I must want it consistently. Proverbs 8 34 says, blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my doors, waiting at my doorway. It's not enough to just listen once. It's not enough to want it really bad and to run to the parking lot searching for this treasure. I must do it consistently. It says, waiting at my doorstep daily. You know why? Because what if I am really wise one day and I listen and Proverbs says, don't get angry. So today I didn't get angry, right? But the next day, I'm like, I did it enough. I was wise yesterday. Today, I'm going to really tell my boss off. I'm going to tell him what I think of him, right? It's a good way to get fired. Wisdom is something that happens consistently. Every single day, I wait. I go to the door of wisdom, and I knock, and I say, hey, what kind of wisdom do you have for me today, right? I need wisdom today. So those are the three attitudes, and that's where to get wisdom from. Okay, so we've seen why wisdom is important. We've seen kind of how to get it. Let's go back to Solomon for a minute. Solomon was a genius. Politics, economics, arts, whatever it was. This guy was amazing, right? We all want to be like him. How did this guy end up? The wisest man. He wrote the handbook on wisdom, right? He wrote the handbook on economics. $1 billion a year of income. He wrote a worldwide famous sermon, bestseller, right? All of these things. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 4. Solomon grew old, and his wives turned his heart from God, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord, and he followed Ashtoreth and Moloch, and so on and so forth. And God became angry with King Solomon. In 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 9 to 11, God talks to him. He says, because your heart has not been fully with me, because in your attitude you've turned away, you're going to be destroyed. I'm going to take the kingdom from you. Why is this man, up to that time, tons of wisdom, what happened? What happened to this guy? He screwed up. The wisest man. In the beginning, when God gives him wisdom, he says, I'm not going to read it for the sake of time, but Solomon says, I am just a little kid. I don't know. You're putting me in front of hundreds of thousands of people, and I don't know what to do. Right? He was humble. In the end, his heart got prideful. In the end, billions of dollars, best-selling books, songs that hit the top of the charts. Right? Solomon screwed it up. Well, that's depressing. Let's turn to Jeremiah chapter 31, and we'll wrap up in just a minute. Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 31 to 34. The wisest man that ever lived, excluding Jesus, because Jesus was man and God, wisest man that ever lived screwed it up. So what chance do we have? I'm not nearly as smart as Solomon, right? None of us are. The time is coming, the Lord declares, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel. It will not be like the covenant I made with their forefathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they broke my covenant, though I was a husband to them. God knows that we screw up. He knows that even with all the wisdom, all those things, it was a trick thing when I said be like Solomon, because even with all that wisdom, he still screwed it up. God knows it. And here, he says, this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel after that time. I will put my laws into their minds, and I will write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. That is the new covenant. That's what God promises us. Solomon screwed up. Adam and Eve screwed up. We don't stand a chance. Even if we know, Solomon wrote the handbook on wisdom, but he wasn't able to follow it. Proverbs chapter 8, verse 27 to 31, describes wisdom as a person. It says, when God created the earth, before he set the foundations, before he created the solar system, before he put clouds and the rain system and all that, before he set it in place, wisdom was at his side. I was the craftsman. I was the general contractor that built and put it together. Right? And I rejoiced in every single work. It's basically God creating this and that and wisdom going, that is amazing, keep going. Here's how you put the atoms together. Wisdom was a person. Who is that wisdom? I hear people saying it. It's Jesus. If you would turn with me to John chapter 1. In the beginning, right, where Proverbs says, I wisdom was there. Here's what John says. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Let's see what else I wanted to read. Verse 14. Listen to the beauty of this. The Word, let me put it a different way. The laws, the rules, the commandments, the regulations, all those things that Solomon, that Adam, that I cannot keep, all of those things, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the only one who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The law, the commandments, the nature of God, the beauty of what God is, became flesh because we couldn't do it. Our hearts were stone. They were screwed up. And God said, well, that old commandment, that doesn't work. The Word became flesh. He loved us so much. He didn't cancel out the truth because it says further, verse 17, for the law was given through Moses. The commandments, the rules, the regulations that none of us can live up to, the morality that keeps the universe going was given through Moses. But here's the best part. grace and truth came through Jesus. Notice it doesn't take away any of the law. The word is still there. It adds to it. Grace. That's what we've been given. We've been given grace and truth. So Proverbs is a person. What I read about Proverbs, it's that relationship with Jesus. It's the love of God that that last song talked to us about. It's love hanging on a cross, right? The words, the commandments, those are dry. We can't hear them. But relationships, when we see Jesus Christ dying for us, that love puts wisdom into our hearts. That relationship is the one that gives us life. We'll keep screwing up. We can't live that perfect life, but we have Jesus. And it's completely different when I have a love relationship, when those dry laws, that penal code, when I see what it looks like, you know, when I see the nail-scarred hands, right, when I see the love of God in front of me, right, that's what changes me. That's the power of God. And Proverbs can speak to that. Where does that leave us? Do I need to not read the Bible? Do I need to just focus on one thing or another? No. How do I receive Jesus' words? How do I allow myself to be touched by this love? By reading Proverbs, by reading it every day. There's 31 chapters, one for each day, right? By communing with Jesus Christ, by being in that love relationship. So that's the point of this message is, where am I going, right? Maybe I don't even have that relationship. Well, that's what Jesus Christ offers us today. Is that love, that commandment, that rule personified? Jesus Christ come in the flesh to give us that life. And he offers it to us today. If you haven't accepted him, now's your chance. If you have, he invites us daily to continue to enter into that relationship. Amen.